Hi, and welcome to Five Compelling Questions with Sean. This is the podcast where we talk about writing with writers. And I have a good friend of mine here today. We've been friends for a good number of years now. Bruce Robert Coffin is here. How you doing, Bruce?
Good. How are you?
I'm
Thanks
good.
for
I can't
having me
believe,
on, Sean.
yeah, I can't believe it's the first time. I should have wrestled you down years ago, but here we are. So, Bruce is the award-winning author of the Detective Byron Mysteries, co-author of the Turner and Moseley Files, along with best-selling author Lynn D. Walker, another good friend of mine, and author of the forthcoming Detective Justice Mysteries. Ooh, we're gonna have to talk about that. Former detective sergeant with more than 27 years in law enforcement, he supervised all homicide and violent crime investigations for Maine's largest city. Following the terror attacks on September 11th, 2001, Bruce spent 4 years investigating counterterrorism cases for the FBI, earning the director's award, the highest award given a non-agent can receive. So you know your stuff when it comes to law enforcement, that is for sure. Winner of Killer Nashville's Silver Falchion Awards for Best Procedural and Best Investigator, and the Maine Literary Award for Best Crime Fiction. Bruce was also finalist for the Agatha Award for Best Contemporary Novel. His Anthony-nominated short fiction appears in several anthologies, including Best American Mystery Stories 2016. We'll have that one. I remember when you got that. Bruce is a member of International Thriller Writers, Mystery Writers of America, Sisters in Crime, Short Mystery Fiction Society, and the Maine Writers and Publishers Alliance. He is a regular contributor to Murder Books blog. Ugh. And he lives in Maine. There's too many M's. There's too many M's in your bio. And he lives in Maine still. You haven't gotten tired of Maine. So, well, welcome to the show. So you write 100 things a day. What are you talking about? What are we focusing on today?
Actually, what's funny is today I've been trying to finish the my rewrite and edits for the third Turner and Moseley file book, which it's really a in addition to being an odd thing to collaborate for the first time, it's odd having everything front loaded. I'm not used to that. It's used to that mad dash from the beginning of the year to the end of the year to get to the next book out. This is we've been working hard on these, and I know everybody's anxious and wondering what we've been up to, thinking we're not doing anything. But yeah, the third book is nearly done, and the first one doesn't come out until April, which is just mind blowing to me that we've worked a lot. We put a lot of work into these. They're a lot of fun, and I think one of the other cool aspects of doing it this way is that you don't get a chance to forget all the stuff that you do, from year to year when you're writing a series. It's really easy to forget things. It's easy for me to forget things from the beginning of the book to the end of it, but because they've been rapid fire and we just turn right around and start on the next one, there really is that gap isn't there. And it's like binge watching, your favorite show, except we're binge writing is what we're doing. So it's a lot of fun.
Wow, that's amazing. Well, tell me, how did this all, that was my first question. How did this all come about? Like, I know you, I know Lindy. You guys are both really cool and fun and good, great writers. So how did this, it doesn't seem like a natural thing. Like, what happened?
I mean, really, everything just sort of came together. It's funny because Lindy and I think had first met at Malice or some other conference years back, and I want to say it actually was Art Taylor that probably introduced the two of us. Taking the newbies under his wing and taking us out to dinner, so at one point we wouldn't be nervous about this strange cast of characters we were meeting, and I think that's the first time we ever met. And then over the years we've done stuff together at conferences, and it really everything kind of fell into place. Lindy was looking to write a series that was a little bit of a departure from the darker, mystery aspect. She had two series going on already, and they. Some of them tended toward some of the books tended toward the darker side of like law enforcement or procedural, like what I write with Byron. And she wanted to write this new thing that was more, it's still mystery, it's still highly mystery, but it's probably more action adventure oriented if you had to swing one way or the other, and have it be a little bit lighter, a lot more fun, and just a different thing, to kind of air out that side of your brain. And she wanted a co-author. And as it so happened, my Byron series had met an early demise thanks in no small part to COVID, I would say, probably had a lot to do with everybody's situation in the writing world that I know. It really changed the structure of everything. And so the fifth Byron that I had been working on, which was really close to being finished, damn it, but that's how that works. We all know. And then I found out that Harper wasn't going to do a fifth book. So, you know, I was sort of lost and trying to do different things. Paula Bunyer, my agent, was trying to, she was cracking the whip and trying to get me to do a standalone thriller. And honestly, I started like six of those during that lockdown time and never finished one. And then one day, just out of the blue, I Paula asked to meet up with me, and we had lunch, and this is what she dropped on me. And I was immediately excited. You know, it's like everything in this business. When something weird happens, something you don't expect that's good, you know, your first inclination is, oh, absolutely, yeah, let's do this. And then 3 seconds later, you're like, no, that's scary. I don't want to do that. You know, your buyer's remorse even before I signed anything, you know. So we talked a lot about it. Lindy and I spent some time talking about it. Severn River Publishing, who's been absolutely phenomenal to work with, I spent a lot of time talking to Andrew Watts, the CEO. We talked to everybody. You know, and it's funny because Karen, my wife, was on board. Paula obviously was on board. Lindy wanted to do it. And I love the idea of working with Lindy, but I was petrified of, you know, what if it doesn't work? You know, what if, you know, these two brains don't go together. It's, you know, it's scary enough being up here in your own gray matter without allowing somebody else in. And I was really nervous about it, honestly. And I kind of wrestled for a couple of months with what I was going to do. And ultimately it worked out. One of the people that way back when I first started doing this that I was lucky enough to meet and have a long conversation with at my very first BoucherCon, actually down in New Orleans, was Reed Farrell-Coleman. And Reed has sort of been my go-to guy with a lot of those weird questions because he's been doing this for such a long time. And I love the way he doesn't mince words. If he says something, you can take that to the bank. And he's very upfront about it. And so I said, you know, geez, they had invited me to come down to CrimeCon the first time I'd been down there in Connecticut. And I knew Reed was going to be present. So I just sent him a cryptic text and I said, hey, you know, would you mind if I discuss something with you while we're down there? And he goes, no, not at all. You know, we'll find a chance to, you know, quiet corner and we'll chat about it, whatever it is. So I laid it all out to him. And he basically, you know, I think what I was trying to pick at his brain about was, even though he's co-authoring for an author who's no longer around, the Robert Parker series, is that's a tall order to take over that and keep it going. And he obviously had a lot of success with that, so I figured he would know. And I told him, I think my biggest fear was that either it wasn't going to work out co-authoring, once you start into it, it's, you know, it's too late. And or the other thing was that my fans had already come to know me for writing the Byron series. And although there are aspects of this that are similar, it's not the same series. It's a different thing altogether. And I was afraid that maybe this would be off-putting for them, or that I would lose fans as a result of it, or, you know, all those weird things you think about. And he basically said to me, hey, look, you know, when they dropped the Parker thing in my lap, the Jesse Stone thing, you know, my first thought was absolutely. And then my next thought was, oh, are you kidding me? Like, this is one of the most beloved fictional characters, right? There's 9 Tom Selleck movies out. There's been a billion books. And Reed Farrell-Coleman could be the guy that destroys that, right? You know, by writing a bad book. And I thought, geez, that's not even, my problem isn't even close to that. And he said, you know, you guys don't have to worry about it. You're inventing something that's your own. And there is no expectation, you know, to the point of what I was coming into. And then in typical Reed fashion, he gave me the fatherly slap, which was, somebody's offering to pay you to write 4 more books and you're thinking about it. And I said, well, when you say it like that, it sounds totally, you know, yes, I'm going to do this. And so that was it. You know, I went and made the phone call and the ball started rolling after that. So.
Awesome. Well, hopefully you pay enough to pay for all your therapy bills. I'm going through all this trauma.
Right. It's true. It is weird. I mean, you know, as a writer, we all at times things are great, and then 5 seconds later, you're a horrible writer. And you don't know why anyone would want to read that. You know, we just do that. We have those highs and lows. And I think one of the nice things about co-authoring for me is that we, if Lindy's having a bad day, it's easy to be there, and vice versa. You know, if I'm losing my stuff, Karen won't have any idea what it is I'm losing my stuff about as a non-writer. But Lindy gets it. So I think we're both real, you know, compatible for talking each other down off the ledge at any given moment. So that's nice.
Yeah, it's always fun when your spouse looks at you like you're insane. Just, you're thinking too much. We don't know. We're like, all right, right? Why do you do this job? It's like, no, great. Cool. Well, that's interesting. So that was one of my conversations leading into my next question. So what is your process for collaboration? Do you guys have set out what you're supposed to be doing? Do you take on the different voices, the roles? What is the writing like? Do you share chapters? How does it work?
It just started. I think the reason it started the way it does was Lindy does the lion's share of the plotting. And when they first approached me, when Severn River first approached, Lindy had this idea. And so she was really cooking up what would be the first novel in the series, The General's Gold, which will be out in April. And so she had a lot of that done. And so I really didn't know how we would do it. I know I'd had a conversation with Doug Preston, and I know he and Lincoln Child kind of alternate chapters. And, you know, everybody does their thing that co-authors a little bit differently. And, you know, some will just take a character, some will just outright take a character, like Charles Todd and his mom. And I didn't know how this was going to work. And so we did a couple of, before I signed anything, we did a couple of trial chapters. So she sent me, like, you know, here's my description of what chapter one and two would look like. And I just took that and ran with it. And, you know, the instruction was, you know, feel free to do with this what you would do, you know, do your own thing. So this is just my recipe card, but, you know, go have at it. And when I turned the other two back into her, those two chapters back into her, she absolutely loved them. And I thought, well, all right, I got two chapters done. We're good. We can do this. And, but it's really been that, you know, and she has, while I was working on the first book, writing the first book, she's off and plotting the next one. And that's been continuous. I think we've carved down the process to a more workable kind of deal where I finally understand that she said, you know, she's given me that leash of feel free to go off the page, you know, do what you have to do, write your book. And so I'm good about following what she has for guidelines, but I tell people I have that Tim Conway moment from, you know, when they used to practice on the Carol Burnett Show all week long, and then Tim Conway would come up on a live taping and just go off script, and no one knew where the hell he was going. Well, I kind of do that sometimes when I'm writing these, if I get an idea that takes it in a cool direction. And initially I was really nervous about doing that, because I thought, geez, this was her baby when we started, you know, and she's repeatedly said, write your book. And it's really worked out. So her plot lines have become, they're just as long, but the actual wordiness of them is, you know, they're pared way down to nothing at this point. And, you know, I tell people she can write a line of direction, and from that line, I'll write 15 pages, you know, like, cause I have to set it up, how they're going to get there, who they're going to meet, where they're going to go. And it's a lot of fun. We found that she was doing a lot of research as well for some of the historical stuff. And I would read it and then do my own research anyway. So some of that we've kind of pared back, and it's just been a blast. I mean, I feel like we both brought these characters to life from a germ of an idea. And now to me, they're just as real to me as they are to Lindy. And it's just fun, you know, it's just fun.
So aren't you glad you took the leap? You were scared, and now you're having a blast. See, that's how, you know.
Yeah. I had no idea it was going to work out like this.
Things that are worth having, you know, there's risk and reward. It's just the way, you know, I mean, you know.
Right.
Read this right, because if you fall on your face, nobody, you know, nobody would notice. Nobody's waiting for these. Cool. But now we all are, because it's exciting. So speaking of your characters, that was my next question. I love when we vibe into the next thing. Who are these guys? Tell us the premise. How did you decide on these characters and the premise? You said Lindy did a lot of the pre-work, but who are they? And what are we going to look forward to meeting them? What are they about?
So, really what we wanted to do was take, like some of the old action adventure series and update them. If anyone has read like the Clive Cussler Fargo series, or if you're a fan of the Indiana Jones series, or any of those types of things where there's a lot of action, there's a lot of humor to kind of lighten what's going on. There's bad guys everywhere, but there's not a lot of carnage, which is sort of the point of these. And we wanted that wide audience where we would appeal, I think, to a different to a wider age group. We both agreed that we cut all the F-bombs out. There's none of that stuff. And in fact, we even made it a thing where it's the absence of that is actually funny, because one of the characters, the two main characters, are Avery Turner, who is an absolute brilliant computer genius tech person. And she's independently wealthy because of an app that she developed. And so here she is, 30 years old. She has everything she could ever want. And she's bored out of her mind. And enter Carter Moseley, who is, unbeknownst to her, is a social media star in the world of diving. He videotapes all these scuba diving things and does all this research, and he's not hard on the eye, so he's got this monstrous following, and she meets him, just a random encounter, and the next thing you know, she's taking scuba lessons, and as a result of weird things that happen, they end up actually chasing a treasure in the general's gold that actually predates the Civil War, and even back to the Revolutionary War is the reason that made its way to the States. And like I say, there's bad guys everywhere. There's the story can take us anywhere. In the first book, we decided that it would be fun because she's from actually she's from Texas originally, but Lindy's from Virginia, so I'm in Maine, and we wanted to kind of hit the East Coast of the U.S. and kind of highlight that as a first place to take this series. And the other fun character that everybody seems to love, I know Drew Ann said she couldn't wait to read more of him, but Drew Ann Love had read it, and Harrison, which is actually Avery's kind of right-hand man, and he was a former homicide detective from New York Police Department, New York City PD, and was a former partner with Avery's mom. And she's now deceased, so Uncle Harry has sort of moved in and become that right hand, and he is probably the most fun to write. He gets all the good lines. Our editor calls him Eeyore. He's kind of our curmudgeon, but he's a curmudgeon you can fall in love with, so he's a lot of fun to have around. He kind of plays the go-between between the two of them. He's not too sure initially whether or not he trusts Carter, because he's very protective of Avery. And Avery, who's excellent at self-defense and all that kind of stuff, uses Harry as her punching bag when she's practicing. So that's a lot of fun too.
You've said fun so many times. I mean, it just seems like and you look at the covers and it looks like it's going to be a cool ride. It's going to
Yeah.
be, yeah, I can't wait to get in to dig in. You have to send me a book. Send me a copy. I should be on your ARC list.
You should be. I'll send you a
Yeah.
digital of the general school. I'll send you a digital of that right
All
after we
right.
get done
I'll say something nice about it online.
here.
But so as I stated, we met a really long time ago up at Crime Bake, and at that point you were just getting started in your writing career. I
Yeah.
think you had a story and like your first book had just come. I have a picture of us with your first book, but you have an extensive law enforcement career ahead of that. And
Yeah.
I also know for a fact that you're a really good artist, like a really good painter, and you've won awards for that too. So you're just
Thank
one of
you.
those annoying people that are good at a lot of things. So what made you want to do write? This is about Bruce. What made you want to be a writer? Because you could have done anything or just retired and hung around the pool. Why did you want to write?
Right. Paula just mentioned that to me recently, actually, too, when I talked about the amount of work. She said, "Well, you could just sit around and enjoy your retirement." And I went, "No way." For me, really, I tell everybody the story, and I think it's one of those where you hear someone else say it, and you don't believe it until it happens to you. And I always loved reading. As a kid, I loved being read to. That was the age we grew up in. There was no cable TV, there was no internet. If you were lucky and you had tinfoil, you might get 2.5 channels. So you really were forced at that age to use your imagination. And mine was just vivid for whatever reason. And I tell people, you know, one of my memories, aside from the parents reading us at night before bed, was that our teachers in the early years, like first, second, third grade, they would read to us until the book was done, like an hour after lunch or half hour after lunch, whatever it was, every day. And I remember sitting there in whatever it was, say third grade, and the teacher was reading to us Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. And everything was so vibrant to me, you know, that every word that Roald Dahl wrote, I could see, you know, I imagined what the everlasting gobstopper tasted like. And I wondered what, you know, how cool it would be to have lickable wallpaper. And I could just see all that stuff and, you know, visualize everything. And when I finally got to a point where I began reading because I wanted to read and not for things that I was assigned, I remember being real enthralled with the idea of the new Stephen King book that was coming out called Salem's Lot. And really, for no other reason other than that they ran a TV ad every night at 6:30 between the local news and the national news. And I tell people, you know, it was that typical kitschy thing, but it was for Bookland, which was a small chain up here in the Maine area. And they had a guy in a wingback chair next to the fireplace, and there's a darkened window, and he's got this hardcover book in his hands, and he's wearing a bathrobe, and he's talking in real low tones about this book, this horror novel coming from Stephen King called Salem's Lot. And as he's doing that, something starts scratching on the outside of the window glass. And every night I couldn't wait to sit in front of the TV and watch this. So, you know, gradually I became entranced with the idea of reading this book. And my parents had a little argument about it, and my dad won that argument for some reason. My mother thought I was way too young to read something like that. And I gobbled that book up in just a few days, reading mostly at night in my room. And my mother was right. It scared the crap out of me. It absolutely scared the crap out of me. I had to keep lowering the book, trying to see if something was staring at me outside my window. And but something weird happened. For me, it was the first time a book had actually come to life. Like, you know, for any of you who haven't read Salem's Lot, I apologize. Spoiler alert, it's a vampire story. Really what Stephen did was he modernized, you know, your classic Dracula story. But instead of setting it in Transylvania or someplace that no one has ever been, he made it more plausible by sending it right near my hometown. And he set a fictional town right in the middle of all these places I knew in Maine. And he described people that I passed on the street every day. You know, places I knew, like Portland's Custom House Wharf, where the Casco Bay lines go back and forth. And that's where the Barlow's coffin gets delivered in the middle of the night and then shipped off to this town. And which just made it more terrifying, but more believable. And I couldn't put it down. And when I finished, I said, this is what I want to do right here. Like, I want to be able to do this. I want to write books that people can't put down. Tell stories that you stick with you after you've read them. 11-year-old me already found that one thing he was infatuated by, and it's been writing ever since. You know, my life has had those weird ups and downs where it didn't go in a straight line. I suppose nothing does. But it made all the difference to me. I always knew this was what I wanted to do.
That's awesome. I love that story. You know, our generation, I think we're really lucky that we got to grow up as kids with him terrifying us. We all have those, like, I was in sixth grade and it was a Spanish class, I'll never forget. And this girl next to me under the desk, like it was like porn or something. She's like, here's Christine. I was like, oh, what is this? I didn't know what it was. And I'm like, oh, you should read it. It's really good. And I thought, okay. And I would just read all the time. My mom didn't care what I was reading. She was like, as long as you're reading. I mean, I like had a side eye here and there, but she's like, oh, at least that's not, you know, drugs, I guess. I don't know. Go ahead and read that. So I read that first, and I was addicted. I just could not get enough. It was sixth grade. That was way too young. But I had an adult library card, and they actually called my mom, and they said, is she allowed to take, like, four Stephen King Everyone's like, yeah, that's fine. That's fine. Call the child abuse people, because that's okay with
Right.
me. But yeah, it's exactly what you're saying, because it's very, and I knew this as a child. I was like, this is very average day-to-day people in this story. I see these people. Like, it was, that's I think what we all connected to, because Kristen, she
Right.
was so eloquently said, he makes it, that's why it's so scary, because it's so recognized, like a grocery store. He puts a story in a grocery store, and then every time you go to the grocery store, you think, oh God, you're gonna get fogged in here. It's just
Right.
everyday stuff that you'd always do, and it's like, oh no, it's scary. He's great.
That's
He's
funny
great.
you
And
bring that up. The store, the IGA or whatever it is, or something foods that he describes in that story, The Mist, is actually based on one that's in Bridgeton that we drive by all the time when we're heading to like New Hampshire. And I can't drive by that store and not think of that story, and the big giant mosquitoes and all the bad stuff outside. I just love that. Like, you wonder, was he thinking about that as he was driving by the supermarket before he wrote the book? Because I can't not think about it now. I love that.
Absolutely. There's just certain things you'll always associate with her, songs, things,
Right.
whatever. But yeah, it's
Right.
amazing. Yeah,
Right.
Christine was my baby, my first one,
That's a great
my
one.
gateway drug. Yeah, my
That's a
gateway
great
drug.
one. I
Yeah, it was
still
fun.
want that car. Not the creepy car, but that car. That's a beautiful car.
Yeah. And you guys up in Maine are very possessive of your Mr. King, so he's yours. We know he's yours. All right, this is the fifth question.
Right.
So, what experiences, or if any, from your personal life have wound up in your fiction? Do you tend to draw on your experiences from your previous work, or do you try not to do that because it's too weird, or what do you do? Do you do any of that?
Not the plots themselves. I cherry pick a lot of things that are personal experiences from the job or even my own life. I think one of the things that makes good writing is, and I try to tell people this because we all like to whine about things that are not going well in our lives or things that happen, and then we get a fresh dose of perspective when someone we care about suddenly goes through something worse. And so, but I think adversity definitely is one of the things that makes writing great. If all we wrote was fluff pieces and there was never a hard time for any of our characters or never any emotional things that happened that hopefully will rip the guts out of the reader. I mean, to me, that's why we all cried at the end of Old Yeller, and probably I still would today if I put it on. We all know what those feelings are because we've experienced things in our lives that have been adversity we've had to overcome. And I think a writer who's not adverse to putting that thing on the page and not just saying, well, then this happened, but actually sharing your emotions with the reader, I think you make a connection that is beyond anything you could make. People always talk about how do I make my characters three-dimensional? Well, give them real problems, make them real people, because we all know what loss feels like. We all know what falling in love feels like. We all know what, all these things are that are part of life. And if you can sew those into your fictional story and tell them honestly, which means taking a look inside yourself, you'll write something special that will stick with people. I think that's the key. That's what I try and do. So
You do a good job at that. You're very good.
thank you. Thank
It's
you.
easy to connect to your characters and to your plots, and you're very thoughtful. And that's what I always appreciate in other writers. It's not just slapping things down. It's like you've definitely crafted good characters and good stories. So it's no wonder you're getting all this praise from everybody. So very good. Well, you did great on the questions. That was five.
Thank you.
Now you have to do a quiz. You have to do the quiz. The quiz is now. All right, number one. Do you prefer reading standalone novels or series?
Boy, that's a tough question. I guess series because it's like an addiction. It's like anything, why do we collect every single Beatles album? Because they're there, but every once in a while I'll read a book that just knocks my socks off that's a standalone, and I wonder if I'll ever do that. The first two that pop into my head, I talk about all the time. Not This Tender Land, William Kent Kruger, Ordinary Grace. And I love This Tender Land too, don't get me wrong, but Ordinary Grace just knocked my socks off. And I love his series, but that book just was something totally different. And I was envious when I read it. I'm like, my God, this is so good. And The Marsh King's Daughter by Karen Dion, same thing. I read that. I'm like, oh my God, is this incredible? You know, I tell people I discovered that book before Hollywood did. So there we go. But yeah, no, I mean, I think I love the series more, but man, a good standalone is hard to beat. There's no question about it. I think it does something to us as readers because it wants you, forces you to want more. And there's something about, you know, moving away from the table just a little bit hungry that keeps you wanting to come back. And a series necessarily won't do that because you know there's more books coming. And you also know that, you know, unless he puts a red shirt on, Captain Kirk is coming back from the planet. So in a series, you're kind of, you know, there's less mystery, I think. When you write a standalone, all bets are off. And you really don't know what the writer's going to do to you till the thing is over. So they both have their places on my shelf. So,
yeah. These are really hard questions. Sorry. Number two, do you prefer reading books set in contemporary times or historical?
Probably more contemporary, but you know, it's funny I say that, but historical, a well-done historical definitely does something, especially if it's a subject I'm interested in or a time I'm interested in. We do a lot of research in this Turner Mosley Files series because there's a historical element in every one of these. You know, we take it and twist it and stretch it and bend it and make it fit. But the basis is always some kind of historical treasure that they're chasing after. And I really find that a lot of fun. The hardest part of that is going down that wormhole and having to climb back out and write the book, because you find out a lot of stuff you didn't know, either because I wasn't paying attention when they were teaching it in school, or maybe they didn't teach it in school. But it's a lot of cool stuff that, if you're a student of history, you realize how often stuff just revolves back around. You know, nothing really changes. Human nature is what it is. We think that we've changed a lot because we have computers and all that cool stuff, but and big screen TVs, but we're the same people we've always been. And it's fun in history to see how we've, you know, we just went down these roads once before, you know, everything, different names and different places, but it's the same stuff over and over again. So the one fascinating thing about human nature is that it doesn't seem to change.
Yeah, which is encouraging and also terrifying at certain moments of your life, because you're like, oh, what? Why are we making all these mistakes again?
Right. All these right. Things? Well, you know, even in my old job, even in my police work job, I figured out after 27 years that we were, you know, there were younger, because I had refused to take promotions beyond detective sergeant. And so there are now younger people that are in charge of me, in charge of the department and doing all these other things. And they weren't there when we, you know, fought the good fight years before. And it might even be the same battle with different people. And so you suddenly realize that your knowledge and your expertise doesn't mean as much to someone who hasn't been there. And so you start looking at it and going, all right, I've become that guy. I'm that old guy now. And no one listens to him. Look at Crazy Bruce over in the corner. And I just think that's what happens. I think that's just life. You know, we learn things and then the next generation has to learn them all over again. It's yep. Fascinating, but like you say, it's terrifying at the same time. Be great to have the luxury of hindsight. But I always tell people, if I could be young again and still have this brain, I don't know that that would help me, because when I was young, I was foolish. And I think even knowing everything I know, I'd be foolish all over again.
I don't think we have a choice. I think it's just the growth stages of your brain. And, you know, and being a parent, I see the things and I'm like, oh yeah, I don't know why I thought my parents, I wasn't getting away with any of these lies.
Right. Right.
I can tell you're not telling me, you know.
I will never say those things that mom and dad said to me, right? And you find yourself saying them with passion, right?
Because I said so.
Right?
First sign of a dumb rule. That's what George Carlin said. First sign of a dumb rule. Said so. Right. Do you prefer to write in the mornings or the evenings? Or you just write all day long, all night long?
It feels like I write all the time. No, mornings really for me. your brain gets to a point where it just turns into mush. I usually try and save my late afternoons and evenings for a reading if that's what I'm going to do that day. And that works out better. If I try and read in the morning, I am up against the problem of immediately my brain starts getting ideas for the project I'm writing, and it gets in the way. It's like your mind wanders and it goes off the page. And even without anybody in the room, because your mind's talking to you, it's the same as someone talking to you while you're reading the book. I can't concentrate. I will read the same page over and over again while I'm populating the book that I'm supposed to be writing. So I find getting up in the morning first thing, your brain's fresh, the coffee's hot, the caffeine is flowing, and the ideas just come much easier. And then, and when you've got that out of the way, then if you end up having to do something else later in the day, you don't feel as guilty about it either, That's
Absolutely.
just the way it does it for me,
Think on scientific poll of people on the show, it's generally for most people, it's the morning and then it's over. But I know I for sure I can get down 1500 in a couple hours between 5 and 7. And then the world starts work, wakes up, and then parenting, all that other stuff has to happen. It's hard to get stuff done. People want to eat,
You
they're
have to
like,
start
can you
saying,
hit
I said so, because I said so. You got to get up and start saying that.
every day they have to eat every day.
Right.
Okay. You can't take a day off of feeding people. All right. Would you rather watch a movie or a TV show?
Well, if I can watch a movie without commercials, which I understand I'm going to have to pay more to do now, thanks to Amazon. No, I don't know what it is. That's almost like it's almost like comparing the series to the standalone book. I love a good movie. It's like I'll give you an example. Last night, for whatever reason, I was in the mood to watch Waking Ned Divine again, which is one of my favorites. It's just a feels good thing, small town, pints of Guinness, everybody's got a great accent, and I like the plot line. It's just a fun movie, and for me, that's going back to visit characters, like why rereading a book. It's the same thing for me. TV shows are great. I find that I don't care for the network stuff. I mean, we don't have cable anymore. We cut ties with that, but I realized after watching a lot of sitcoms and that type of stuff that what I was reading was predictable. What I was watching was predictable. It was very formulaic, and you just change the characters and the name and you feel like, okay, I've watched these shows already. It's just a new show. We really, Karen and I really got into BritBox and Acorn and some of those. I love the British, the Irish, the Scottish, New Zealand. There's a lot of really good, darker edged mysteries on television, and we just can't get enough of those. I'll give you one of the first examples that absolutely hooked me on those channels was Broadchurch. I loved Broadchurch. The two main actors were just incredible. And if you're looking for a way to plot a mystery, if you're a new author and you're looking for help, watch Broadchurch. That may be one of the best plotted TV shows that I've seen. So I think if it rises to the level, then either one works for me. But I don't know. I've got a lot more movies on the shelf over there than I do TV shows. So I guess it has to be a special TV show for me to care about it as much, but there is good stuff.
There's quality TV now, but yeah, Broadchurch is awesome. I love that whole thing. I watched it a couple times just because it is really good plotting. All
Really is.
right, this is the last question of the day from me. If you could have dinner with any author, living or dead, who would it be besides me?
Oh, besides you, well, then that's it. There isn't anybody else. I've got a relative. He was Robert Peter Tristram Coffin, or Robert P. Tristram Coffin, that everyone knows, Pulitzer Prize winner, in no danger from me of being eclipsed. He died before I was born, and I grew up knowing all about him. I've got books of poetry and novels of his, and to me, that's a brilliant mind that I would love to be able to sit down and just chat with one on one. And I figure since we're related, I might have an in, in the afterlife to get to do that. So, but yeah, no, I've always been a fan of that, and it's one of those things where you think, okay, well, again, I'm not him, but it shows that I think that the love of writing can run in a family. I think that might be genetic. So he would definitely be probably the top of the list for me. It would be fun to sit down and chat with him. I feel like I got robbed because he wasn't around when I was old enough to appreciate it.
Well, that's cool. That's very neat that you have a literary legacy in your family. And
Yeah.
somebody will be saying that about you down the road. So that's cool. Well,
Right.
very good. Well, I wish I could have met them. That's awesome. So, what's going on? Are you guys going on tour? How are you gonna celebrate all these books coming out?
It's weird with we're going to do, I think, our own individual thing just in our area. I've got some things happening in Maine. I think my first launch for the General's Gold will actually be in Portland, Maine, at Longfellow Books on the 16th of April, the day the book actually drops. And then there'll be a couple other signings. And then Karen and I are hitting the road, so because we're heading to Malice and then down to Florida and North Carolina for a month. And I'll be writing every day in case my editor is watching this right here. I'll be writing every day while I'm gone. But yeah, on the way down to Malice, we're going to be at Elaine's on, what did I tell you? That's that Wednesday just before Malice. I think it's the 23rd of April, that Wednesday. We'll be at Elaine's in Alexandria from 6 to 8 or 6 to 9. And Jeffrey Higgins will be grilling us, interrogating Lindy and I about our new series. And we'll be signing books and that kind of stuff. Hopefully, a bunch of people will join us for dinner that night. That would be a lot of fun. I've been dying to check that place out. So, but yeah, we're going to do a lot of our own things and this kind of stuff. It's a little weird being in two different parts of the country for the signings, but I think we'll figure it out. And it's really rapid fire. We've got the second one, The Cardinal's Curse, comes out in June. I think it's June 11th. And then on my anniversary, my wife and I got married on October 29th. That happens to be the launch day for the third book in the series, which I'm finishing up right now. Oh my God, I forgot the name of it. Hang on. Oh, The Pirate's Secret. And that comes out in October. So yeah, there's a lot of books coming out this year. All the people that were whining about how they didn't get any new Bruce Coffin books for the last 4 years. Hang on, you're going to get a bunch this year. So, and then I've started writing with my next series, which is the Detective Justice Mysteries. And I've got to have the first manuscript for that series turned in, I think, by November. And the first book in that series will be called Crimson Thaw. And the series is my main protagonist is a Maine State police detective, homicide detective, who is a big deal in southern Maine major crimes until something that really bad occurs in the opening scene of the first book. And he'll be sent packing to Siberia's no, Maine's version of Siberia, northern Maine. He'll be working major crimes north. So he'll be up in the county, as they call it, and the fish out of water series. And I think it's going to be a lot of fun. I think if you like the Detective Byron mysteries, you're going to love this one. It's like Byron, but a lot different. So,
Cool. That sounds great. That sounds very British. Like it sounds like
yes,
one of the shows.
right,
Like from London, but now I live in, wherever this is, and I have to solve
right.
this. Oh yeah. Very good. Well, I'm here for whatever you're doing. So I will read all of
Thank
these. I
you.
cannot wait. I will join you for dinner in Alexandria so you could answer that
Awesome,
question with me too.
awesome.
And
I
then we
love
will
that.
do that. Yeah, so it's
Awesome.
so good to see you. I'm so happy for you. I'm glad you have all these things going on. It was a rough period for with the pandemic and everything, but
Yeah.
we're back. We're all back. You're doing stuff. Things are good. Life is good.
Thank you so much. And I'm looking forward to BoucherCon in DC.
Me too. Me too.
Absolutely.
We'll get you something fun to do. We'll give you a
Yeah.
cool job.
Thanks
All right, my friend. It's
so
always
much,
nice to see
Sean.
you. Yeah, it's always good to see you, and I hope you come back and talk about the next series. I want to hear more about that.
I promise. Thank you so much.
Of course. Bye.